We've seen the impact we make when we stand together. So let's stand with candidates who represent us in Washington, D.C. Sherrod Brown always stands up for the well-being of our community, capping the price of insulin and cracking down on predatory landlords jacking up rents in black neighborhoods. Black power is in our votes. Let's use it today. Vote now to re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Thank you. Hello again, fellow basement dwellers. This is your good friend, Patrick O'Toad, welcoming you into another edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Bandwagon Nerds is, of course, brought to you by Chairshot Radio Network here at thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
And I would always... Sorry, Christopher Platt, I cut you off. My mistake. Here, let's, you know what? One more time.
Thechairshot.com. My fault. Always use your head.
It feels more normal when I cut him off, though, like I
That's
did right
fair.
There.
I promise you, he doesn't care one bit.
he's an ardent listener and messages me every day.
Yeah. He used to care.
Once upon a time. Guys, we do have a special guest on the show today on the rundown. I just want to personally welcome our Spotify overlords for listening to the podcast. We appreciate you. Thank you so much for letting us know that some whiny artist who makes millions and millions of dollars can't get their millions and millions of dollars because we played a song or something. And then I think that segues very nicely into welcoming the culprit. Way to go, Dave. The lawyer himself, famed published author, David Ungar, master of the brisket, David Ungar. I have to admit, I'm a cheap bastard and have yet to order your book. I'm sorry. But congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
I didn't even know you had a book.
No? Oh, Tony hasn't been on Facebook. Yeah, DP knows because he liked the post. I did.
Are you being funny or being for real?
Who?
You. Are you being funny or being for real?
No, I'm never on Facebook, so Dave's right. I don't know about the book.
Oh,
but
how about that?
But listen, since DP knows about it and liked it, he likely already bought it.
Yeah, it's
very nice.
It was fun. It was, I mean, a lot of kind of a lot of work to do it, the book, and self-publish it and that sort of thing. But you know, it's funny. After I published it, I had like a bunch of people come up to me and say, "I've had so many problems with making brisket," and I'm like, "Well, this will help you." But yes, thank you guys very much, and don't worry about it, Pat. I got some guy messaged my wife. Okay, send me a free copy. Okay.
Send me a free copy.
He's like, friends.
That's
don't
how capitalism
let...
works.
What did he say? He said, friends don't let friends buy their books. And I'm like, all right. But I said, that's fine. I don't have any
my response would have been like, are we friends?
So
but
what
are we friends?
So we So we still haven't done the appropriate thing we need to do here, though, Dave. What's the book called, and where can it be bought?
Ah, it is a book called... No, I'm just kidding. It's called Bomb Brisket, A Beginner's Guide to Barbecue's Most Legendary Cut. And you can buy it on Amazon. It is exclusive to Amazon at the moment. You can get it paperback, or you can just download the ebook version. The ebook version is like $2.99. Paperback's like $9.99. So it's pretty cheap.
When can we expect to find it on Audible? Because I need to hear the sweet, sweet tones of David Ungar teaching me how to cook brisket.
If it was on Audible, you would not hear my voice for damn sure.
He's paying Chris to pay Chris.
There's an idea. Chris narrating that's a really good idea. And he probably wouldn't charge me that much for it.
No.
Listen, he would secure your services for the rest of his time on the planet Earth by doing that for you. You know this.
Yes. I actually think there's more of a market for one Raymond S. Cashington Esquire, the 932nd, to be like the total brisket.
Yes.
By David Ungar.
We might have found an episode title.
Total brisket.
Missed opportunities. That's the second book. That's the second book.
Yeah, the follow-up.
That's the sequel.
The follow-up.
Well, on that note, Ray Cash, how you doing? Welcome back to the program. This is like 2 weeks in a row. That's a Patrick O'Dowd record.
I was this close to calling out. It was this close.
But you didn't because you love us.
Well,
Is it because you've been here every week since they both missed? I think so. It's almost 5 weeks in a row, isn't it?
I'm pretty much back regular again. I don't want there to be the expectation that I'm going to be here every week.
It's too late,
but
man.
I'll show up and surprise people. It's always good to be surprised, right?
You never know.
Everybody likes surprises.
I appreciate the surprise. I'm glad you're here. Honestly, this is part of my routine. Is everybody knows that Dave and I record Hockey Talk / Musical Chairs before we record BWN. It's part of the schedule. It's a routine. It's what we do. There is the in-between when we finish recording the first podcast where I'll go and I'll refill the water. But the other part of my routine is then going over to Twitter to check the DM thread to see who has backed out of the show for the afternoon and being ready to go. And I will say this, you usually message us. DP, we just assume if it's 2:05, he's not.
That's true. That's okay. I'm much better than Dan, and let Dan know that I'm much better than him in this regard.
I mean, science waits for no one.
He knows.
So, of course, we got to round out welcoming the bandwagon. We do have to say hello to our executive vice president of production, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Saturday Night, shaking his head, acting all humble, Mr. PC Tunney.
Saturday Night Live was good last night. Michael Keaton and Billie Eilish. Some good skills.
Oh, okay.
It was fun. Bart Gotze was
nice. I have yet to see the highlights yet.
Yeah, Bart Gotze was really good, actually, yeah.
Yeah, all
Mulaney.
Right.
Mulaney in 2 weeks.
2 weeks. 2 weeks. Okay.
Wow, welcome back, Mulaney. That means we're going to get at least one Broadway musical-esque sketch, because he always does one of those.
Wonder
be interesting.
Maybe a Nick Kroll spotting?
Possible. Very much a part of the equation. All right, fellas. Hey, we have got quite a little episode to talk about today. We have... episode 6 of Agatha All Along. We got some fun trailers out of the trailer park. Some news. New York Comic Con happened this past week. And of course, they saved the very most impactful piece of news right after I'd finished the rundown. So thanks a lot, Marvel. We'll get to that when we talk a little bit later. But we are going to kick things off with a Billy Maximoff-centric episode of Agatha All Along. And I loved this episode because it was a very important episode explaining, basically filling in the gaps, filling in the holes of where we are. We learned who put the hex on Billy, and it was not who I expected. Ray is shaking his head. And I'm forgetting her name right now.
Liliana?
Liliana, yeah.
Yeah.
Lilia.
That's right. Lilia,
who, yeah, started with an L, was the one who puts the hex on poor William. Guy's just trying to, make his way into manhood with the Jewish faith and finds out he's got a split lifeline and then he's in some trouble. And we learn that he was a resident of Westview, happened to be in Eastview or Eastwood, Westview, Eastview, I can't remember the names of the towns. We're the old Patrick O'Dowd, by the way. So if you want to start the drinking game, everybody, feel free to start the drinking game where Patrick O'Dowd forgets details as the entire bandwagon lifts up beverages and throws one back today. But he's celebrating his bar mitzvah. We find out that it is happening simultaneously with the climax of WandaVision. He is heading back to Westview with his family when his mother, there's a car accident. Billy dies, or William dies, and we learn that Billy, in the aftermath of the end of WandaVision, finds his way into young William and begins this identity crisis of trying to figure out who he is. He learns he can read minds, and basically most of the episode is 3 years of Billy sort of trying to solve the mystery of who he actually is. We get the cameo guest star appearance that I know I wasn't expecting. I was thrilled to see Evan Peters reprising his role as a crazy, he feels like a crazy conspiracy theorist in the way that he is acting. Tunney shared his favorite line, I'm assuming, of the episode on the X Twitter, which was?
Oh, what? Go ahead. You got it fresh on your mind. What exactly was it?
He lost all his Blu-rays, but let her have his Bowflex.
Oh,
he didn't care. Yeah. Something along those lines.
I left all the Blu-rays. Agatha
could gamer have Bowflex. Or was it his tag like Boner 69 or something?
Bonerific 69.
Well, remember his name is Ralph Boner. So I mean,
right.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to go meet this guy in a fucking parking garage. I mean, it's brilliant. What could possibly go wrong?
And the other thing that I thought was really cool about this episode is through William/Billy's memories, he encounters every single witch except for Aubrey Plaza in this story. Like Alice shows up, Jennifer shows up, even Deborah Jo Rupp's non-witch shows up as Mrs. Hart. We got to show. So I want to hear no more complaint of queer baiting in this show. Billy's straight up gay, and it's completely normalized in this show. It is not any sort of tease. There's no like we're shipping this. Billy is as comic accurate as he's been since the day we met him and Teddy in Young Avengers. So I just want to end that. I want to acknowledge it because it's terrific. To see there was no pussyfooting around with it. There was no teasing. Like, that is part of who Billy is. And it was awesome to see that his partner was so damn supportive, even though it wasn't Teddy, and gives me hope that someday we're going to see Hulkling. But we got Eddie instead of Teddy. That was super supportive and was there with him while he went to go meet Bonerific 69 or whatever his name was. I really liked this episode, and it culminates with him, you know, seeing his perspective of meeting up with Wanda, her capturing him helping her break that spell, and then we get the confrontation between the two of them. Did he really kill Lilia and Jennifer, or are they going to pull out of it? We know they didn't kill Aubrey at all. No way.
Yeah, she's the one missing.
Yeah, Agatha pulled herself out.
Rio's the one missing from this whole
thing. Rio's the one missing.
Like my wife's like, everybody's dead except those two. I'm like, Rio is nowhere in this episode, and she's still out there. So that's the X factor.
So yeah, so that was the episode. This was very much an exposition background thing, setting up the last third of this series. Because in the end, even though they're at odds with each other, they still need each other to finish the road, Agatha and Billy. And so here we go off. Further onto the road. So, Ray, I'm going to turn it to you first, as is my want to do. Your thoughts, things you want to add with regards to episode 6 of Agatha All Along.
Well, first off, I'm glad you mentioned the fact that Billy is very comic accurate, even down to the name Billy Kaplan. It's we're a long way away from Love, Simon being kicked off of Disney Plus and put on Hulu because it was too much, you know. And yes, we've had Fastos and his husband on Eternals, but that's the check. This is the first pure on Disney Plus Marvel version of there being some type of LGBTQ relationship. Am I wrong in that?
To that extent,
no,
you're
don't,
not wrong.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I don't think you're wrong at all.
So good on them. And like you said, the most important thing was it was normalized. That's what we're trying. That's what we need to do. That just make it normal. Just regular fucking people. I also liked that
they showed
just Marvel. Yeah.
Okay.
I also liked how they showed him struggling with who he's trying to be and reading his parents' minds and realizing that they really don't like each other. They're just there for him. They think something wrong with the guy. Like, that was kind of cool. And yes, the partner being super supportive. But we got an answer to our question last week, which was, when did the sigil break? And Agatha said she always felt there was something up with it, but she realized it. When did she say she realized it?
When he had a tell, just like her mother, his mother.
Yeah, and she realized it. But yes, also the hilarity of who put the sigil on him. I think it was just a very, very well done episode to kind of get us back to where we were going. And I did wonder the same thing about Agatha. If Agatha could come back from the same swamp that Lilia and Jennifer were put in, it makes me wonder, are they really dead? Because that would be very inconvenient for Agatha to just continue to be this super witch who just can't die. But the other two witches who are important to the, you know, to the exposition of the show. But also, man, Billy a little too big for his britches right now. Because he's angry, he's upset. You like the alliteration? I see you, Tony. He's angry at Agatha. He's like, I can do this shit on my own. And she's like, all right, go do it then. And he's like, wait a minute.
Go for it.
Wait a minute.
It reminded me of my parents when I'd be like, I could totally do this thing. They'd be like, okay, look around and find out.
To kind of like jump into what Ray's saying here, I don't think Billy has control of his powers other than mind reading.
No.
But he was able to manifest the crown and all that stuff because he was angry. And this just seems to be the secret to him, is like, if he's angry or agitated, he can, because like when he tries to show her the power at the end and nothing happens, and he's like, well, you know, it's there. So, you know, he doesn't have, so obviously he cannot do this without Agatha because she's in full control of her powers right now. She's got her purple back and all that fun stuff. So I thought that was interesting that, yeah, you're right. They need each other, even if they have a lot of animosity towards each other right now.
Man, the boy had a spell book the whole series until he lost it when they did the brooms. So, yeah, he knows nothing about what he's doing. It's all just innate. But also, I'm sorry, one last thing, and we can move on from me. What I appreciated about this episode, the last thing was, we for sure know that Tommy is around, too. Because they didn't really allude to it too much. We knew Billy was going to be involved in some, but like, he straight up said, my brother, no, I'm looking for my brother.
It is the reason he wants to be on the road, Ray. It has nothing to do with power. He wants to find his brother. Tommy is the end game in this whole thing. And I think that's, you know, that becomes clear in this episode. He wants to find his brother. But yeah, and as a Jewish person, can I just say, I have yet to be at a bar mitzvah where there was a palm reader. I'm just going to throw that out there, guys. I have never seen that happen yet.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I was reading the IMDb and they were talking, like, there was something, it was like goofs or mistakes. And it was like, clairvoyance is like really taboo amongst the Jewish faith. And there would be no way in hell that a palm reader or a fortune teller would be at a bar mitzvah.
No. I thought it was funny as hell, but no.
My question to you, Dave, is how rich have the bar mitzvahs you've been to been? Because when they get super rich, they let them kids get whatever they want.
I never did mine, but because I just, like, I don't want to sing and recite the Bible or the Torah in front of all these people. I was too shy back then. But no, they are big bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs. They are a big deal amongst the Jewish people. But yeah. Never seen a palm reader.
And now you're on like 7 podcasts.
I know.
I can't talk to anybody now.
Argued in front of the Court of Appeal and all.
I have an idea for episode 300. Dave's Bar Mitzvah.
Let's go. We just
is that copyrighted material? Because we don't want Spotify to get after us.
Wait, I got it. DJ is being confused with a rabbi anyway. So he could be like the rabbi, and then we could just have some fun with it.
What we'll do though is when you sing the it sounds like a doxology. I don't know what the actual term is. We'll have to bleep that out so Spotify doesn't cut us off.
If I sing it, it can't stop me from singing my own shit.
Couldn't you just I mean, we can just make a mockery. Because here's the thing. I don't want to mock your faith, but it really does sound like you're really hawking a loogie or something when you're talking and reading the Torah. So, like, just we'll just have one really, like, instead of a beep. Damn it.
I'll be talking in. It sounds like Mephisto just jumped in there, Ray.
So that'll be the second half of that episode.
You gotta talk about my fish show. You don't need to talk about my fish show.
Well, you know, even the last Spotify episode of the series.
Cool stuff. I gotta bring back, you know, Super Nerd.
Exactly. Last episode.
You hear that,
series,
Spotify overlords? We are following your rules. Thank you. You see what happened was Lars Ulrich probably complained. That's what happened. It was Lars.
You used Metallica?
Who did it. Lars. See you guys. They use our music without our permission. It should have cost us $1.50. We should have made that $1.50.
I didn't know retainer guy had a business and law degree.
You gotta know how it all works. Honey, what do you think of Agatha?
Oh boy. I want to know where it's all going still. Like, what's the end game for this? And I don't know. I didn't really love.
Oh no.
I guess you can't have the big surprise kind of reveal thing that you had the episode before without telling the story in the order in which they told it. Because I'm sitting there going, boy, they could have just told the story normal and had him figure it out on his own. That could have been the big revelation. But yeah, I'm still in on it. I just want to know what we're leading this to, because this could connect to a lot of different things.
You're right. But here's the thing. We're going to find out in 3 episodes, right?
True story. Yeah, that's all that's left.
I mean, there's
we got one next week and then 2 the week after.
Yeah, there's a lot of subtle stuff happening in this episode, though. I mean, you know, the belief that Vision's been turned into spare parts, which we know is not true. The adamant belief that Wanda's dead, which we know is probably not.
You're wrong, sir. Vision is spare parts. White Vision is not.
Okay.
The original Vision is spare parts.
But I think the bigger thing is that, you know, Tommy and Billy were what Wanda created them, but they were real enough that Billy's whatever could jump into William Chapman's body vessel at the moment that he died. So there's, you
Kaplan.
Know, Chaplin,
William Kaplan, William, William Kaplan.
You're right, Tony. Kaplan's much more Jewish than Chapman, right? That's very true. but yeah, it raises that's kind of like interesting. So Wanda created life in some form or fashion, and it wasn't just this manifestation of her alteration of reality. So yeah, I think, you know, to me, I'm with you, Tony. I want to know what happens. You know, okay, we know Tommy's at the end. Is Wanda
right,
at the end? Is Wanda at
right.
the end? Is White Who, Vision or something at the end?
Billy's end game is to find Tommy. Use this as a way to reconnect with Tommy, right? But what's Agatha's end game? I don't think that's as clear.
Power, but she's already got it. So.
Well, right.
So and she thinks.
But even if that's the case, and it is power, what? Why? You know, it can't just be, because she's super powerful.
We have three hours of show left to find that out, though, guys.
Did you notice that
this was
the longest episode yet, by the way?
Yes.
49
like,
total.
It's just, we have plenty of time. Like, we have three episodes left, and we're going to know. We're going to learn.
Let's not forget the antagonists of this show, besides Agatha herself, are the Sisters of the Seven Sexy... Seville, whatever.
The
girls.
They were they sexy?
Sexy Salem 7.
I mean, hey, under that makeup, they could be bad. I'm just saying.
How adult do you want this conversation to get?
Well, not too adult, because
we did have Star Wars sexy time.
We're gonna find out. And this was a very necessary episode. And yeah, sometimes exposition episodes aren't the most thrilling or exciting to watch. To me, it was very good. To me, I really liked this episode. I really liked that this was all about reestablishing, you know, Billy, you know, answering the question, not only that it's him, but like how he came to be in young William Capper's body. And that was the important part. So I like this. And now we have two protagonists who are trying to find themselves, because that's the other part. A part of this is Agatha's penance for what she's done. Previously, like, I think this is very much a sins of the past sort of thing, whether it be with regards to her son, her own coven, her family. I think this has been a great story and a great series. I like where this is going.
The fact that this episode did not get review bombed, despite the gay love scene, tells you how good it was. And that's very poignant to me. It's like, you haven't heard any sort of real backlash about this because people genuinely enjoy this series. So, you know,
yeah, there was no woke Disneying going on today, this week, which is good.
Refreshing.
So I like it. Good first half hour to the show, guys. We're going to jump into our first commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little Trailer Park and some news around the Nerdosphere. So stay tuned for that, everyone. We are off to a great start here on the Bandwagon. So come back. You're listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com.
When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and matching technology that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 75% of employers claim Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other online job sites, leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences daily. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Join today by heading to Indeed.com/podcasts11 and get a £100 sponsored job credit. That's Indeed.com/podcasts11. Terms and conditions apply.
Ohio seniors, make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Welcome back to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. Patrick O'Dowd, PC Tunning, David Ungar, Raymond S. Cashing. Head over to ProWrestlingTees.com/chairshot for all of your beautiful chair shot swag needs. I repping the brand today. Happy to do it. Got it soft style too, everybody. Spend the extra couple dollars. Get it soft style. Because you know what? I forgot. Feels great on your giblets. Feeling good on my giblets. It's all nice right there on the giblets. Dave, you okay?
I am. I just like the grabbing of your. That's very. Yeah. I mean, Sydney Sweeney's got nothing on you, buddy. I'm just gonna throw that out.
She's got everything on me. Well, actually, let's not kid ourselves. What we do need to do though is we are gonna head over to the trailer park, and in order to do that, Dave, I'm gonna need you to cue up and play some of that beautiful banjo.
I'm gonna suggest Tony does it because his is less copyrighted. Mine is. Can we call this episode Tunny's? Is that
we're not going to do that. We're not going to go that far. But we do want to. You're right. I forgot that we need to pay homage to our Spotify overlords, and I guess that means cueing Tunny for the less copyrighted banjo music. So Tunny, could you please cue your less offensive, beautiful banjo?
No, I got new banjos that I want to play. So suck it, Spotify.
So thanks a lot. That
sounds copyrighted to me, Pat.
Well, here, that was the Dragon Ball Z version of Beautiful.
No, that's Hillbilly Jim's new theme music.
What is that?
That's a new style of music called Deathgrass.
Deathgrass.
All I could imagine was that, you know, there's Goku standing in the middle of a field while the banjo is playing in the background with some, you know, wizened old sage as the battle gets ready to happen. All right, let's hop into the trailer park. We're going to start with a trailer that's not a trailer. They've done this a couple of times. but it was an important trailer as Amazon Prime shares their teaser for Invincible Season 3, where this has been the joke for the teaser before the real trailer for many, many years now, where we get the, it's been a while. What the hell you been doing? Where you been? And you get the, well, I've been busy sort of trailer. But we did get a date with this. And I think the other important piece of news that we got from this little trailer, we found out today that, or we found out with this trailer that we're not going to get a season break. We're not going to get a mid break. And that's exciting. Ah, so, Dave, are you ready for more Invincible Season 3? And are you happy that we're going to get it, what, in March?
Is it March or February?
No, February.
February 6th?
Sorry. Daredevil is in March. That's my bad.
I'm thrilled that, you know, we got Invincible Season 3 coming in less than 6 months, and that there is no mid-season break, and Cecil just basically calling Mark out on all of his bullshit and being in denial for what the hell have you been doing since you got back? And I thought that was hilarious. So, give me, this is like Invincible's like one of those shows that I want injected into my veins. So yeah, let's get here. Let's get to February. Let's see what happens. So can't get here quick enough, sir.
Tony, you shared this trailer.
No, it was fun. It was clever what they did, kind of making fun of themselves a little bit. I agree with Dave, though. Like, this is probably one of the least criticized shows that we've ever covered by the bandwagon. Like, the bandwagon approval of this rating of these first two seasons is pretty damn high, I would say. So, yeah, anticipation is there, definitely for me.
Great cash.
Oh, yeah. And I like the look of the. I like the possible new look. Like that blue suit. That looked pretty sharp. Sorry, Ray.
All good. Yeah. I mean, we're all locking step. This is one of the top five shows we've reviewed in probably the history of Bandwagon. So, like, I can't wait. It's one of the best shows on television. I think it's, forgive me for being maybe a bit hyperbolic here, but I don't think I am. I think it's revolutionized what animation is, because this has been such an eye-opening experience for people who think that all animation is children content. And this, like, I know a lot of people that I've introduced the show to, and I'm like, well, yeah, it's, you know, it's animated. Like, it's a cartoon? No, it's not a cartoon. It's animated. It's totally different. And that's opened up their minds. And so, like, I think this, along with The Boys, have kind of changed the way we look at what can be a superhero property. And this in many, many more ways than The Boys. Can't wait. Still got the best voice cast in the business. Got so many things we got to figure out. And I like that they alluded to the fact that, don't forget, old girl coming back, and she's bringing a big bag with her. So I'm ready. Let's go.
And we will get 3 episodes on February 6th before they then start to drop new episodes weekly on Thursdays through March 13th. So a month of episodes coming your way beginning February 6th. The timing couldn't be better. The next trailer Super Bowl I shared.
Isn't that Super Bowl week?
February 10th. February 10th. Okay.
That's right down there.
Yeah. Or 9th. Sorry, 9th. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So, you know, before we get ready to watch the Bears in the Super Bowl, we can watch a little. Sorry, just kidding.
We're on the bandwagon for real. Now, nah, look at him.
I love my. Our next trailer comes to us by way of Netflix, and it's titled The Electric State. It reminded me, and I'll start this. It had what's the young woman's name? Stranger Things. Millie Bobby Brown.
Yeah,
is playing the protagonist alongside Chris Pratt. Story of a young woman trying to find her brother. There is this concept and idea of it's very much like AI, but with AI within the context of robots who have basically been exiled by the human race because of their perceived threat to the human race. Millie Bobby Brown, who believes her brother is dead, or believed her brother to be dead now, feels that he is alive and being held in this wasteland where other robots reside. It was a very interesting concept to me. It gave off a lot of vibes, and I don't know if others felt this too, because there's a lot of pop culture connections with these different robots and characters. To Ready Player One, Mm-hmm. But like in a little bit of a different way. And I see Ray and Dave nodding. I'm intrigued by this. I'm always intrigued by a Netflix flick that is usually relatively easily accessible that I'm going to be able to just hop onto Netflix and watch this when it comes out. Didn't see if it had a theatrical release or if it's going to do the Netflix thing where it's like in a theater for a day before it's available on streaming. But I color me intrigued by this trailer. Dave, what say you?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Ready Player One because that was the first thing that jumped to mind when I was watching the battle going on with the robots and the people and that. Yeah, it sounds like a really another like an interesting concept, like you said. Love the cast. Cast looks solid. Millie Bobby Brown, Chris Pratt.
Yeah, very strong cast.
Cast looks good. It's a Netflix movie. I'm genuinely intrigued by this, you know, to see what kind of, because like we've talked about it before, how AI movies and you know, AI gone wrong is so prevalent. And this is more like a, you know, humans interceded pretty quickly and put the clamps on AI and got them, you know, under control. And, you know, in that respect, it brings up some existential questions, right? If AI is cognizant and conscious and actually living, you know, what right do we have to suppress them and imprison them and all that? So I don't know if that's what it's about, but I'm intrigued enough in the concept to check it out.
And I buried the lead here. Sorry. This is brought to you by Anthony and Joe Russo.
Right.
Of the MCU, you know, the MCU yes. fame. You know, they are the go-tos. Tony, your thoughts on this trailer?
Straight to Netflix. $320 million budget on this one.
Wow. To go straight to Netflix.
Oh, on that
yeah.
budget?
Yeah. March 14th, 2025. It looks like I'm intrigued enough to, I'll have to at least start to watch it. It just seems like, for me at least, either I'm going to love this or it's going to be totally stupid. One of the more interesting lines I heard was, you know, robots had lost their right to free will or something like that. There was some sort of line exactly like that. So it's interesting to see who the real bad guy is here, you know, in the end. But it could be fun. It definitely makes fun of itself. It definitely looks like it has some humor to it. It's really interesting looking, some of the robots.
I mean, can you go wrong when you have Woody Harrelson voicing the Peanut?
I
probably not.
Right. Can you go wrong with
no.
with Alan Tudyk voicing Cosmo?
Oh, Alan Tudyk is about to be on a roll here.
He's got a lot going on right now. A lot of irons in the fire. But Ray, commenting on this trailer
Giancarlo
before some of his other work.
Giancarlo Esposito, the yep. Tuchinator, like they got some heavy hitters. So
Jenny Slate.
Yes, who's one of the best voice actresses in the game.
Key.
This is a perfect example of a movie and a story that I have zero interest in. And then I see who's directing it and I see the cast and I'm like, well, maybe I'm wrong. Because the idea of a robot insurrection, so to speak, can be interesting. What I do like about the movie is I like how crazy, off and weird and almost freakishly a lot of the robots are animated, how they look. Like, if I see a robot with that big ass head walking in my room, I'm not going to be like, hey, buddy. I'm going to be like, get the hell out. What are you? But I don't like it framed around the idea. So you said Ready Player One. It feels a lot like the 12th Wave. Have you seen that with Chloe Grace Moretz? Where, you know, all the adults got killed and the aliens tried to basically convince the kids that the remaining adults were the aliens or whatever. But the whole movie ended up being, oh, I lost my brother. Like, I don't know that that's going to be a plot that's going to be like, hey, I got to see this. You frame it around the robot insurrection and the whole AI taking over. We had to get rid of it. You got something there. The other part of it's going to kill it for me, and that's what's going to be most of it about. I will watch it because the Russos have not steered me wrong once, and that's too good of a cast, but I'm not excited about it.
You Stanley Tucci, Anthony Mackie, Jenny Slate, Brian Cox. I mean, that's insane. The other kind of small vibe I got, Patrick, was you guys remember AI with Haley Joel Osment?
Mm-hmm.
And then that the planet where they sent all like the bad robots and everything. It kind of gives a little bit of that vibe too.
Did you mention Billy Bob Thornton and Jason Alexander both not connected to characters yet, but also casting this thing. It's
Wow. I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't see that.
All right. I guess we're watching it.
There's a lot of talent in this it'll be interesting to see.
Do you guys feel the same way as me, though? It's going to probably be, it's either going to hit really good or we're going to come on and go, that was pretty bad. I don't feel there's going to be a lot of middle.
Yeah, it's a challenging. Here's the thing, is that it's based on a novel. I've never read the novel, and it is one of those things where I'm like, maybe I should check out the novel too to see how it is. The biggest critique I've seen so far is people talking about Chris Pratt's hairpiece.
They hate on that boy more than anybody in the game. He can't win for shit.
Sometimes you earn it. And he's done some things. Let's just say that.
Fair.
Let's move on to a trailer that Dave shared. Tony's favorite genre, horror, coming into play as we got a trailer for the movie Wolfman. That's two words, not one. I initially wrote it incorrectly, and then as I was grabbing the trailer, noticed that it was different. This is a different take on the classic Universal monster, though. Still a legitimate take. I'm going to be interested to see. This is brought to us by the same person, the same director who brought us Invisible Man. And again, his take on Invisible Man was very unique as well. So though he does say it's not in the same universe as the Invisible Man film was, directed by Lee Whannell, starring Julia Garner, Christopher Abbott, and Sam Yeager. Sam Yeager, I do believe, is the Wolfman, or no, Christopher Abbott is the Wolfman that we follow in this, as a father who is attacked when their family's car is in an accident. He takes a scratch from another werewolf. He is slowly transforming while trying to protect his family, at the same time trying to not attack his family as a werewolf. A lot of atmosphere in this trailer, a lot of ambiance, a lot of what you don't see until the very end of the trailer, which is always a good setup for a horror film. And also, one of my favorite things about the Wolfman story is the character that is begging to be killed or not, you know, is cursed, and it's tragic that he's not embracing who he is. He's trying to fight what he is in an effort to protect others or himself. Dave, you shared this trailer. What are your thoughts on this newest look at Wolfman coming to us later in January?
Yeah, I thought this trailer was really kind of like really different from, like, you know, we got the teaser not that long ago. And then so this was the official trailer and that sort of thing. And for me, it was like there's elements of it that I really like this, like you're saying, Pat, this slow transformation. This isn't like, you know, American Werewolf in London, where the full moon jumps up and the transformation's immediate. This is somebody who's transforming slowly and wrestling with, like you're saying, trying to protect his family and trying to resist this irresistible impulse to kill them. So that's a really unique dichotomy that's going on that we haven't really seen explored a whole lot yet. So very atmospheric, like you indicated. You don't really see the werewolf, at least not fully fleshed out, maybe at the end a little bit. I get the suspicion it was the werewolf who caused the accident that these guys were in and then took advantage of that to make the attack. But it's a different feeling sort of horror movie where there's some psychological horror along with, you know, just good old fashioned monsters, horror monsters. And so I'm really intrigued with this one as well. And I'm really curious to see what kind of movie it is, because they did a lot of things right in this trailer.
Tony, they told us to see this in IMAX. You going to go see it in IMAX?
No.
how about Screen X, Tony?
Nope.
Screen
X? Nope.
3D.
So what's 2D? The deal? Like, so the werewolf attacks the man, and the man becomes the wolf man. And I think what the majority of the movie will be about the wolf man trying to kill his own family, right?
I actually wonder if it's too prompt that they're being stalked by a werewolf on the outside while he's transforming into a werewolf on the inside, and the family is trapped. Like, that's the vibe I got, is, you know, they're attacked by something, and why would it stop? Like, why would it quit?
That was kind of my question. Because once it got the guy, they really didn't see the other werewolf. You just saw the guy turning into the werewolf.
So And I think that's intentional, but I think that other werewolf is still there. The thing that I always find interesting about werewolf movies, in the land of horror, in the landscape of horror, I love werewolves. I think they're a very tough horror story to tell sometimes, and that there have been movies, that there's been few examples of movies that have truly done a great job telling the story.
What's the special we had just got in black and white Marvel did?
Werewolf at Night.
That was last year, yeah. Werewolf by Night.
That was excellent. Yeah.
I think it was stupid that they made a colorized version. They should have just kept the black and white version and ran with it, but whatever. Ray, you going to go see this in IMAX?
I got to tell you, it's a bad day for me when I agree with Tony about horror. It's a terrible day for me. I'm not going to say I don't like the movie. I'm not going to say it doesn't look intriguing. But this is where trailers, and maybe I'm just very critical of the trailers in this episode today. This is where trailers can hurt a movie more than they can help it. As me, a guy who cares about the plot and sensical things, and knowing all the stories of traditional Wolfman and things of that nature, I cannot forget or move past the fact that clearly, from my vantage point, there was a werewolf that started the entire thing, caused the crash, killed the boy, the dude that fell out of the truck. They ran into the house, and we never think about the damn werewolf again? We're worried about the guy? Like, yes, that's an important exposition. But the entire time, the other werewolf should be trying to break into the house. That's killing my thought process.
I think he is. Like, I don't know, man. I think you guys are working too hard.
No. I agree with you. That's what I said, Patrick. That's why, my caveat, I agree 1,000% with you. I think he is. But that's how trailers can hurt the movie. Because all I can see and all I know is, I ain't seen no more with the werewolf until the dude dies. And so that's the only thing that's killing me. If I see another trailer where they show me the werewolf was trying to get on the whole time, but we're too busy worrying about old boy out there to worry about old boy in here, you got me. But that's going to be a massive plot miss for me.
I also wonder if some of the stuff that we saw, because we were conditioned to believe that we should worry about the dad transforming, I wonder if some of the stuff we did see wasn't the other werewolf. Like the one on the car.
Okay.
At the very end, I wonder if that's not the other werewolf.
I can accept that 1,000%.
Ultimately, my hope is that the trailer or that the film would be dad werewolf protecting his family against stalking werewolf.
I don't know.
He then tragically dies.
Blakey's family are attacked by an unseen enemy, and then desperate escape, barricade moves inside a farm and says the creature prowls the perimeter. As the night stretches on, however, Blake begins to behaves strangely, transforming into something unrecognizable that soon jeopardizes his wife and daughter. That sounds like the story is him going after his wife and daughter.
That would be against, and I'm not saying it wouldn't be, that would be against type. The werewolf story is always a tragic story for the person who's the victim of the werewolf. Like whoever gets scratched or bit, like all the way back to the original story of the Wolfman, you know, it's, I've been bit, something happened to me, and I don't want to be this thing. And sometimes they do this deal, like they did in The Howling, where some werewolves show a level of humanity at the zero hour to protect their family or others. So I think that also, you know, reading a synopsis of a movie that's not out for what folks haven't seen, like, yes, there's the inherent risk both ways, but I also think the climax is, does dad protect the family or attack it? That would be my question. So Dave is taking care of the werewolves in his house, which means we're going to go talk about different creatures as we did at New York Comic Con. James Gunn did host a Creature Commandos panel, and we got a full Creature Commandos trailer where we got to see all the creatures. And you know, and Ray, when we were talking about Invincible, and you're talking about how animation can be very different than just cartoons, boy, this trailer made no mistakes that this is going to be a violent, bloody good time on Max when Creature Commandos hits our small screen. You know, we got to see all of the major players. We got to see the bride. We got to see Frankenstein's monster. We got to hear Frank Grillo and his flag, right? Flag, is that the name?
Rick Flag Sr., yeah.
Rick yep. Flag Sr., got to hear him. We got to see the World War II robot that cracked my shit up out of all of the characters. like him just indiscriminately shooting the Nazis and having to be stopped and told that Like at one point, no, this isn't somebody we kill. The fish lady whose name is eluding me right now, drink. And the weasel. We got to see the whole group. Got to see the whole team. They all got a little bit of a moment. And these are going to be characters that translate not just from the animated screen, but into the greater DCU. So this was kind of an exciting day for Creature Commando fans and the DCU. Ray, you got a whiteboard. You've written something.
I have.
So I'm going to turn this over to you first. What do you got for us? Oh, okay. Ray is not impressed. Why are you not impressed with this Creature Commando trailer, sir?
I feel very O'Dowdish today because I'm very critical of things. And right, I think sometimes you need to be. I am very miffed at the fact that this is just fucking Suicide Squad. That bothers me. All the way down to the fact that Waller is the leader, or is the person getting them together. And she says, we can't use humans, so we use the next best thing. And they go, it is literally Suicide Squad. And I'm not just talking about like the idea. The movie, The Suicide Squad, from the beginning of walking in Belle Reve and walking to every person introduced, it is so, James Gunn is a genius. It's so lazy. It's so lazy to me. It's so lazy when you have these characters that are so offbeat and off kilter and weird. And like you said, Patrick, cool. The GI robot, GI bro, whatever thing is.
GI robot.
Can be so fun. Like, Dr. Phosphorus is supposed to possibly be, Tony thinks, in the Superman movie. Like, these are some characters that can be cool.
Voiced by Alan Tudyk.
Yes, and you're just going to sit here and just play the hits? I've from the beginning of time, since James Gunn got the job and announced that Creature Commandos was the first thing coming out, I told all of y'all, I believe y'all agree with me, that this is a dumb fucking decision. And I'm continuing to be shown facts. This is a dumb fucking decision because as fun as this show could be, this movie could be, or show, or whatever the fuck it is, as cool as these characters could be, I don't give a flying figgity fuck because it's just the Suicide Squad. And I got two of those. Give me something different. You're supposed to be the guy that came in and was brought in to be different. DC needs you to be different. I don't want Guardians repeated. I don't want Suicide Squad repeated. You've done that already. And this is a waste of my fucking time. It's a waste of my time and my money. And I'm disappointed, but I shouldn't be, because David Zaslav is fucking Mephisto in real life. This is ridiculous. Help me understand why I should watch this fucking show. I don't get it. I don't know. I don't believe it. And I won't. Like, I'm sure I'll watch it eventually at some time in my life. God forbid I don't die in the next year. But, like, I'm not watching this shit when it comes. I'm not spending no money for this shit. It's a waste of my time. Give me something different. Your Superman movie? That looks different. All the other shit that I see you building up, that shit looks fucking different. You want to bring back Swamp Thing and make that a... cool. That's different. This shit is the same old shit that Hamada was doing. I have no interest whatsoever.
This rant brought to you by Spotify.
If it's by
their Spotify overlords.
If it's brought to you by Spotify, then you'd hear none of it.
That's true. It would have been bleeped out. We'll find out on this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Dave, you muted yourself, I'm assuming because the werewolves were still making noise. But do you feel the same? Do you have the same apprehension that Ray has? I do agree that there is a Suicide Squad vibe to this trailer and that it does feel a little familiar. But I don't know. Are we wrong?
Probably. You guys are probably wrong. One thing I did notice about the Tony's nodding with me, so I think
it's all DC. That's what I heard right there, Ray. You know what?
Here's the thing. First off, the trailer has a lot of Invincible feel to me. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on in this trailer that felt Invincible, and you know, it's gory, it's bloody. That's Invincible.
That's the Invincible part. Okay.
No, yes. Go ahead. The Creature Commandos team feels less like just than Suicide Squad than it does Invincible's team and team that is surrounded.
Yes.
And not even a little bit.
And look, I to a certain extent agree with you that they could have started someplace different, you know, but at the same time, Gunn is in a no-win situation, I think, because if you start with Superman, you're going to be on here saying, fuck him. I hate that overgrown Boy Scout. Couldn't you have started with something different? Okay. Let's start with Batman. can't we do something different than Batman? We've already seen this stuff. So I don't begrudge it. It is whether it crashes and burns spectacularly or he pulls a rabbit out of his hat and does something with this show that I think the big thing for me is this is where the new DCU is starting. This is it. This is Gunn's vision.
It is.
This is where it starts. So I'm willing to watch it because I want to see, okay, what does he have in mind? This is not Blue Beetle, which we try to shoehorn into James Gunn's DCU. This is the official beginning of it. So, yes, are there elements of Suicide Squad? Absolutely. You are 1,000. You and Patrick are completely right on that. It's different because there's monsters involved. Creature Commandos is a different sort of property. It is not Task Force X. You know, Task Force X, those guys, you know, you've got some levels of humanity to some of those characters in a few places. There ain't none of that shit here. So I'm willing to kind of just hold on a sec, Ray. Hold on. Just give me a second.
I'm willing
to give this a try. While I agree that, okay, it would have been a good idea to start someplace different. If you're telling me Gunn's trying to think outside the box and do something unique here and start something off with a property that nobody was expecting, and okay, this is a starting point. How does this, because we know now it's all connected, how does this lead into whatever's happening next? So yeah, there's problems with it, but I'm willing because I'm curious. I really want to see what is his vision? Where does this start? How does this tie into any of this stuff? So in that respect, I'm willing to give this a pass. I'm certainly going to check it out. It's no skin off my back. It's on Max. I've already got it. Why not check it out? I mean, why just summarily dismiss it because, well, this feels too much like Suicide Squad. I mean, I get it, Ray and Pat, I do, but I want to see what Gunn has in mind.
Oh, don't bring me in this. I'm probably going to watch the damn thing. Like, I don't care. Like, I'm Mr. DC, don't you know? I watch DC as much as Ray watches Flash Gordon. Fucking A.
I don't. That was an unnecessary shot because I just watched Flash Gordon before the show came on.
Did you? Did Spotify let you?
He did.
No, because Spotify's audio. I watch it visual. There you go.
silent movie.
Two quick retorts. One, you're absolutely right. If Gunn started with Superman or Batman or same old shit, would have been a problem. But we're going from the A list in the Trinity down to the, not the D, not the G, the Z list. Creature Commandos is the Z list. There's so many other properties he could have started with, number one. But to sit here and I get what you're talking about, how they look like the Invisible Team, just from the visual idea of how gory it is. I see you that. But the very context of the trailer is Amanda Waller having a problem she needs to solve, and she can't use good people, so she has to go and find the bad people who are in jail. She just can't use actual people. It's the same literal plot of the Suicide Squad.
Yeah, I get it, but there are a lot of really good Suicide Squad stories out there that have not been brought to life yet. And
I agree.
And I agree with you that, okay, this is the Z team, but he's got some sort of idea. Why? I agree. Why are we starting with Creature Commandos? I know it's a love letter to DC and Gunn is a big DC fan, but what is he doing with this, which has me intrigued?
This leads into season two of Peacemaker. James Gunn has said that it leads into season two of Peacemaker.
And that opens up all sorts of stuff.
My beef isn't with Creature Commandos, the character, even though I think it's a ridiculous thing to start your tenure with. My beef isn't with them as characters. My beef is the laziness in which you're coming in, been brought in, been this big, audible, major thing revamp to change the fortunes of this once great company. And you're just saying, okay, cool, I'll do that.
Right.
You
don't think he was in a no-win situation. No matter what he does here is going to get scrutinized.
No, I don't. I don't. Because there are people like you, like Tony, and like me, and Patrick to an extent, because, you know, he's the DC fan here, but who want DC to succeed.
Yeah.
We just had a long 30-minute conversation, not maybe a 30-minute, 50-minute conversation last episode, about how we're all geeked to all hell about Green Lantern. There are so many things you could do. And again, if you did Creature Commandos and just didn't copy Task Force X, I would be here for it. But the laziness of copying a movie you've done twice is so lazy for this to be the beginning of your tenure.
Creature Commandos is also smart in kind of a underlying way that you do have Frankenstein, Frankenstein's Bride, you do have werewolves, you do have vampires, right? So you are connecting a little bit of that classic horror box that Marvel's been so afraid to introduce into their major MCU lineup, right?
Shots fired.
It was.
I mean, they are important characters in DC. I mean, you know, Frankenstein is...
I've enjoyed this thoroughly. This is a lot of fun for me.
That's like the.
Here's one of the things that I to Ray's point with the Creature Commando. What would have been the problem or harm with following their origin, a la the comic accurate way that they were formed? You know, maybe it's not out of World War II, which is when they were first introduced. Maybe it's out of a war in the Middle East or something to kind of make it a little more relevant to now as the vehicle to kick it off. I think that this is something that while I don't think it's the end all be all of the success of this series and the end all be all on the success of James Gunn's DCU. I do think that there were other ways that you could have done it that would have not made it feel same as, at least in its initial go. And I think that is a fair criticism to levy against the trailer that we saw on this show, because as Ray pointed out, it is Amanda Waller doing Amanda Waller shit, and we've seen Amanda Waller doing Amanda Waller shit more than once. And if you're going to make Amanda Waller your Nick Fury, like, well, Nick Fury, you're shaking your head no. And I'm not saying, Dave, you're jumping to a conclusion here. Like, I'm not saying he's going to be like Nick Fury as in that same character. Like, that's not who Amanda Waller is. But if you're going to follow that model of having like the government person or whatever that is involved with Supes, having her do the same thing the same way over and over and over again, which is what I think people... what Ray is expressing and is feeling here and in executing a similar sort of show. Like, they even have the chips in their heads to blow them up. Like that is also noted.
Right.
That does feel redundant and is risky. I will say minimally, it's risky to go with that and expect audiences to not be like, oh, this is just a sense. So
let me just
I feel it. I understand it.
The real risk with this is starting this off with an animated. That to me is a real risk that Gunn is taking with this beginning of the DCU, is to start it with something animated. That is not going to resonate with a lot of people. Because like my nephew, he's like texts me, he's like, you know, do you think the girls are going to be interested in this? I'm like, no, because it's animated. It doesn't matter that it's Suicide Squad-ish or anything like that. A lot of people are not going to jump on board because, well, what the hell is it? But like Ray's saying, Invincible rewrote what we consider to be animation versus cartoons. And I'm hoping that there's intelligent people like us out there who will check it out.
Do we we got to put a ball on this. We got to move on because we're really hammering this one. Do we really think, like, yes, we're getting introduced to James Gunn's like universe and vision with this animated series. Do we really think it's going to make or break the success or failure of the DCU though? Like, honestly, like, I don't think so. I think it's all hinging on that fucking Superman movie. That's the movie that people are. That's what's going to make it or break it. This is your start.
Look,
I
would say it's not going to break it, but if it's well received and it's popular, it's certainly going to help what comes after that.
Sure, it's not going to hurt, but I think if it's niche and only hardcore DC fans watch it, like, is it really the end of the world? Because everybody know, and more people are geeking out over a photo of Superman sitting with his fucking dog. Then they're talking about Creature Commandos. Like, and if it connects to Peacemaker, a popular show, all the better. So I think we just got to wait and see, but the redundancy is a risk. And I completely feel what Ray's saying there. All right, we got to move on. We got to move out of the trailer park. Let's talk about Neil Diamond, shall we? Because top five artist of all time for Patrick O'Dowd. And so when PC Tunney shared an article telling me that Kate Hudson and Hugh Jackman are going to play a married couple who form a Neil Diamond tribute band in a musical drama called Song Sung Blue, I was like, yes, please. Anything involving Neil is going to sign me up. And then I read further on this article, and I saw that Fisher Stevens and Michael Imperioli and Jim Belushi and Ella Anderson and King Princess and Mustafa Shakir and Hudson Hilbert Hensley are all going to be a part of this movie. I was like, even better. That's based on the 2008 documentary of the same name, which follows the true story of Milwaukee couple Mike and Claire Sardina, down on their luck musicians, became local icons by performing as Lightning and Thunder. The film also borrows its name from the classic Neil Diamond song, Sung Sung Blue. I was like, I didn't know this was based on a real couple. I'm going to see if I can find this documentary. I'm going to learn about these people. I don't care if they're good people or terrible people. I want to know about them. And then I'm going to watch this movie because I love me some Neil Diamond. And that's enough for me. And Hugh Jackman can sing. Kate Hudson, I don't care. Whatever, I can do without Kate Hudson. It can be anybody. But I'm in. Tony, you shared this article. Why'd you share this article, man? Was it just for me? Was it for me? It's okay if it was.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yes. Exactly. Hey. Yeah. How? Of course. Why would you even ask such a silly question?
Naturally.
Naturally. I heard that Kate Hudson is actually very talented. And yeah, Hugh Jackman is going to do like a limited series show too on all the songs he sung in all his shows as well, I thought I read. So this just looks fun. I love Neil Diamond. It makes me want to watch the movie Saving Silverman.
I was just
going
to say, I had no idea they were doing a reboot of Saving Silverman. This is going to be awesome.
Don't you dare. Don't you dare.
That was a great movie.
It was.
I never answer the door at my meeting. How long have you known me? But yeah, this looks good. This looks fun. Hugh Jackman's on fire. And he's one of the most talented entertainers like in the history of the world. Think about all the things he's been successful at. It's hard not to love Hugh Jackman.
Dave, how much do you love Hugh Jackman?
You can never have enough Hugh Jackman or Neil Diamond. And I'd be playing some Neil Diamond in the outro, but our Spotify overlords can suck it. Because that's not going to happen. But
we talked about a Neil Diamond cover band documentary, so you could play like up to 30 seconds of a Neil Diamond song.
I don't want to risk it. I would hate for our Spotify overlords
to actual copyright
come after
rule.
Us. Yeah.
Do you actually have a segment talking about a song? Like, is there a particular?
You'd actually have to put it in like now to share. You can't do it like after the fact. I bet you they'd find a way around it.
We will
bow to our overlords and take it up the tailpipe, and that's all right.
I'm just saying.
But that doesn't mean there won't be some Saving Silverman at the because hey, fuck you, Spotify, on that front. No,
I didn't know that. You didn't know I was gay either.
Spotify inclined to suck.
You know, if you get a whole bunch of nachos together, it counts as
one. That's one nacho.
That's one.
Got some magazines over here. Some of them are Monster Truck. Some of them are porn, and some of them they're a little bit of both.
Yeah. We're trying to cut down on water.
Do you remember when Jack Black was funny?
Yes. In this movie.
Ermy is the best at this movie, period.
Yes. God damn that. You ate her? That's smart. That's the perfect crime. So I love Neil Diamond. Hugh Jackman's immensely talented. Kate Hudson is as well. This has my interest. I mean, the second you said Neil Diamond, I was like, I'm in. So yeah, I mean,
Ray's also a big Neil Diamond fan. He knows all of Neil's hits.
The biggest.
He plays in the background when he watches.
He's got the jazz singer on loop right now as we speak.
1,000%. Ladies and gentlemen of the bandwagon, let me explain to you. See, when you hear the jokes of Ray Cash watching Flash Gordon and the group thinks I haven't watched it, I actually have. But when you hear the jokes of me liking Neil Diamond, the truth is, I don't know shit about this guy but the name.
You would be surprised how many songs he wrote for other artists that you would be like, oh, damn, I had no idea.
How many songs he knew parts to of Neil Diamond.
I agree with that. So I know the legend. I know who he is and like what he's accomplished and who he is to music. I'm saying I ain't got my boy on the Spotify, you know.
You should consider getting your boy on the Spotify.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Beef. Anger. Ah. The one thing I will say is the only thing Hugh Jackman does better than be best friends with Ryan Reynolds and play really good superheroes is do musical theater. So I have no doubt he's going to kill this role.
Probably. I too have Spotify. You can't see it on my phone because of the graphic, but it's there.
I'm the only one who's anyway. Like, fuck you.
But you're an Apple guy, huh?
I am. My playlist there and everything.
I don't actually. Yeah, I barely use Spotify because I don't pay for it. I use my Apple. I use my Apple Music. Because you know what they don't do? They don't tell us to cease and desist. Okay.
Wait. Yeah. It's coming. Just give it time.
Yeah, one day we're going to all get sued. It's going to be awesome. All right, let's move on to our one more story before we head into our commercial break. I didn't know this movie was coming, but Edgar Wright is producing a reimagining of The Running Man. Josh Brolin has been cast. Oh, sorry, Edgar Wright's directing. He's not producing. He land a villain role opposite Glenn Powell in a reimagining of The Running Man at Paramount Pictures. Now, before folks say we don't need another Running Man, let's just bear in mind that the original Running Man starring Arnold Schwarzenegger and Richard Dawson came out damn near 37 years ago, 1987. Most people younger than us have never had the privilege of seeing the original Running Man. You've never seen the original Running Man, Ray? Yeah, for real?
No.
Oh, it has some of the great, it stars the great professional wrestler, the Professor Toru Tanaka, former tag team partner with Mr. Fuji as yes. Sub-Zero. Hey, Killian, here's Sub-Zero. And now, you said, Plain Zero.
And you said Richard Terrible. Dawson, you talk about of Family Homeless Feud, Heroes and Family Feud fame?
Yeah. Hmm. He plays the corrupt television game show host of the Running Man game.
That fits.
It takes place in a dystopian future where criminals are given the opportunity to be pardoned if they survive a life or death game show called The Running Man, where they are put into a battlefield to run through this grid. And if they make it all the way to the end and survive, they receive a full pardon, just like Vincent Price and Haddon.
Can I go first since I have the least to contribute to this?
Go for it.
Real quick things. Number one, shout out to Glenn Powell, continuing to raise his profile. Dude's a fantastic actor. Love the guy. Number two, their season two of Twisted Metal, supposed to kind of touch that part of the Twisted Metal game. Three, how dope would it be if in the new MCU with mutants, they had a long shot movie in Mojo World based on The Running Game? Now tell me that wouldn't be dope.
I mean, dude, if they bring in the Mojo verse with long shot, that'd be, I would love that. That means they fully said fuck it. We're just gonna see what happens.
Why not?
Mojo was bonkers. This is based on a novella written by Stephen King, by the way. This is a short story written by Stephen King. So for those who don't know the source material, Dave, I know you love your 80s. I know you love your Arnold Schwarzenegger. This cast intrigues me, as does Edgar Wright as the director. I think this has potential. What say you?
Yeah, it's got potential. Running Man's, ironically enough, not one of my favorite Schwarzenegger movies from back in the day. It was fun. It was good, but it wasn't like, you know, when I think of Schwarzenegger, I think of like, you know, a few tiers, Terminator, T2, and Kindergarten Cop over here, which is something totally different, and Conan, you know, because we always have to hear the lamentation of the women, that sort of thing.
Where's Dominic? It's okay. He's on the pony.
Get to the chopper. But yeah, it sounds interesting. Isn't Running Man? It's based on a Stephen King book or a Richard Bachman or something where he did it, right, Pat?
As I said previously.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
This moment brought to you by the Bandwagon Nerds chat.
Yeah, this moment brought to you by senility and early onset dementia. No, I won't say that. So
no,
I'm not
going to
say early onset dementia, but it's a cool story. It's a unique concept. It's very Hunger Games-ish like, which will appeal to those kind of fans, you know, survive this game show and you can get pardoned. So yeah, I think retelling it for a modern generation is good. You know, you're using, isn't Josh Brolin is the one that they're talking about. So he's familiar with everybody. So yeah, it'll be fun to check out. I'm on board with it.
I got to wonder if he's going to be one of the like stalkers, not the host. Like that seems to make more sense, but we'll see. Sonny, what do you think about a possible Running Man remake, reimagining with Josh Brolin as a primary antagonist and Glenn Powell?
Yeah, I mean, it's such an interesting concept. It's funny because I'm not a trailer guy, right? I'm like, give me as little as possible in the trailers. Like, I'm either going to want to see something or not. But in this case, I got to say, I can't wait to see the trailer because I want to see what kind of tone they take with this, right? Because they could go in a lot of different directions here. This could be a, you know, completely serious and thriller aspect to having some sort of – levity to it as well, depending on what direction they want to take it in. But I'm interested to look forward to the trailer, especially considering all the people that are attached to it. So we'll see.
Yeah. The Running Man itself, the original film and the novella, short story, however you want to describe it, is very much a satirical take on Americans' obsession with television and the game show and the television culture of the 80s, and also the disparity of wealth and poverty, because it's a television network basically controlling its population, sort of making them docile by showing all this gladiatorial style game show stuff. Because in the world, like, every game show is like your life is in danger for like untold riches. So I'm intrigued, and it, like everybody said, the cast is strong. Edgar Wright is a hell of a director, so this has a lot of potential. We're going to take our second commercial break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up a couple other pieces of news around the nerdosphere. We're going to talk about Tom Holland and the interview he gave this week, which has got all of the world in cinema abuzz. All that and more when we return. You are listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com.
This is your boy Kenny Killer telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com. Make sure you head over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot to get yourself some of that sweet, sweet Chairshot swag. Still here with PC Tunney, David Ungar, and the Reverend Raymond S. Cashington, the 932nd, 244th. Gentlemen, we got a couple of other stories that I thought of note. I love being frustrated with a company. I love being frustrated with the production company. And Sony has repeatedly been an easy punching bag for us when it comes to the Spider-Man franchise, their handling of the Spider-Man Rogues Gallery and villain thing. And I have to share that in terms of video game films, I was kind of ready to see make its way into our world to check out a God of War series on Prime Video piqued my interest, because those games, the OG ones too, the ones for the PlayStation 2 and 3, to me were revolutionizing action video games as we knew it at the time. And I was ready to see that story on a small screen. Well, news came out this week that Sony Pictures TV and Amazon MGM Studios are staging a do-over on God of War, as Deadline reports they have learned that showrunner slash executive producer Rafe Judkins, along with executive producers Hawk Ostby and Mark Fergus, have left the project after completing multiple scripts for the first season. Studios are apparently looking to move in a different creative direction, though one source told Deadline the trio scripts were praised by both Sony and Prime. Gentlemen, sounds like our good friend, our good series, God of War, is kind of dead before it even arrives, because we're going in a different direction, and Lord knows we can count on Sony to take us into a good direction. Dave, I need you to tell me I'm wrong.
I can't do that.
Yeah. Tunney, I need you to tell me I'm wrong. Ray, I need you to tell me I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
Okay, now I need you to tell me why I'm wrong, and then it's going to be okay.
Because Sony could be DC or WBD. They're not. But also, if there was ever a show, if there was ever a video game made to be cinematically seen, God of War is it. The only problem is Tommaso Ciampa's.
That's true.
Tommaso Ciampa is just a little busy right now, so maybe that's why they keep playing, you know, pushing it to the side. But no, it's gonna happen. It's we had two seasons of Halo, bro. Like, we gonna get a season of God of War. So I have full faith.
Do you think they go with the Greek god or the Norse mythology?
Well, I think Norse would be better, only because we've kind of associated in our minds in recent years. The Norse are fucking jacked for no goddamn reason. and Kratos is fucking jacked for no goddamn reason. So I think Norse would probably be the way to go. Plus, Vikings are interesting, and I'm not saying the Greeks aren't, but we don't look at the Greeks in their interest because of, like, they're cool. We look at them interesting because they fuck everything that moves. Mythology.
Dave?
I mean, I'm fascinated that that's Ray's takeaway from Greek mythology is they fuck everything that moves. I mean, fuck the Parthenon and all the gods and all that other stuff. They're just they're
more places to fuck. More places to fuck.
So Hawkeye would have fit in perfectly in ancient Greece, is what you're saying.
Hawkeye,
right?
And Dick Grayson are secretly Greek.
It's secret Greek gods.
Say it again,
Tony. I see what you did there.
What'd you say, Tony?
Hawkatui.
Hawkatui. Ray's still releasing both hands when he shoots that arrow, too.
I'm glad someone realized that.
Something will never change,
man. I keep
doing
it and nobody says anything.
I agree with Ray completely that if any series needs to be turned into any video game series, there's two of them that I can think of. Both of them have war in the title. One of them's God of War. The other is Gears of War. Those are two that are tailor-made for something. And so, yeah, somebody's going to pick this up and run with it, I would hope. But it doesn't sound so great at this point in time.
Yeah, I just, anytime something goes back to the drawing board, I never feel like that's a good sign. And, you know, when three executive producers step away, even though Amazon and Sony are like, oh, we loved your scripts, but not like that.
We loved your
later,
scripts, just not enough.
That's mildly concerning. I will be interested to see where they go next. And maybe it is something as simple as maybe they decided they didn't want to do the Greek mythology side of it and do the Norse mythology side of it, or vice versa. We don't know. It just, Sony's handling of the Spider-Man Rogues Gallery really has just made me a sad panda all the time.
Oh, you're not here? You're not here for Sergei Kravinov?
I did share with you the detailed account where the writer did say that Madame Web was criminally underrated, which was concerning to say the least. But Tony, you were about to speak.
No, it's just funny that they had so many rewrites of the script and kept the same people for it over and over again. But, you know, they're writing for a series. What if they change their mind and decide to write it for a movie, though?
I don't think that'd do the numbers that Amazon wants. They need streaming series.
It'll be, I don't know. We'll see. I think, for me, I think it would work better as a series just because the way Kratos goes through and takes on like God after God after God, you can kind of build a series around that.
Movie after movie after movie.
Perhaps. Those also take longer to make.
But so you think that movies take 3 weeks? Where would you talk about?
Why?
Given Amazon's track record, it'll take at least 3.5 years to make season one.
But I'm saying they're not in a hurry.
Fair. It's fair. All right, let's get to our last story. As we had Tom Holland give an interview, and this interview, I only shared one. I love the way publications try to get your clicks, because Tom Holland gave one interview, and I got to get to the story itself. He gave one interview that was reported on by Variety it was the Rich Roll podcast. So Tom Holland does this interview on the Rich Roll podcast regarding basically his career, but he talked about Spider-Man 4 amongst other things. And Variety, in an effort to get you to click to their site repeatedly and subscribe to them, basically parsed out the interview with different headlines as if these all came out of different interviews, and they really came out of the same. So what I did in building the rundown this week was I shared one of the articles and then put some of the other things he talked about with regards to his career down below that we had shared in our chat that were shared in other articles but came out of the same interview. And I thought it was really interesting. And I don't know that we need to really talk too much about the news about it, but just kind of where Tom Holland is now with his career as he's in his late 20s. He talked about Spider-Man 4 and how he and Zendaya has seen the script, that they liked it, but that it needs, quote, some work, that he talked about the timing of getting it in a place where it would fit in the current plan for the MCU. He talked about his growing control and power as he's become a more veteran actor to have a stronger say in scripts, characters, and production. And then he dropped the nugget that he's known Robbie Downey Jr. has been cast as Doom before it was made public. and that he was terrified that he was going to blow it because, as he said, he quote, has a reputation for spoilers. So, you know, Tom Holland is part of a group of young actors that are really starting to find their way and find their own. He clearly has some pull. Does he have Chalamet's pull, or is he still working his way there? This shows that he's at least got a lot of power in the MCU. Sonny, I'm going to start with you this time. We haven't had you kick anything off. Your thoughts on where Tom Holland is in his career, and what kind of should we be paying more attention to him when he speaks into the ether?
I think what his other biggest project is Uncharted, probably, which I didn't necessarily love. What else is one of his bigger projects besides Spider-Man?
Of like major,
Tom Holland.
Military value, yeah, sure. That Billy Madison. What's the movie where he was the dancer? Or was that the play? But when he was a kid, he was in the movie about the tsunami. He's been in a lot of major things.
That's kind of my point, though. Nothing really stands out necessarily besides playing Spider-Man. But I love the way he plays Spider-Man. I like him as a person. I think he's very fun to listen to in interviews. And who's living a better life than Tom Holland right now, besides, you know, being short? Sorry, short people. I'm not short, so I really don't want to be short. But neither here nor there.
Billy Elliot, by the way, is the name of the movie.
Thank you. Let's not forget he was in two major animated movies. Onward, the Pixar movie, and Spies in Disguise with Will Smith. Those are major movies.
All right, but at the same time, he's not carrying the box office as a name in a live action film outside of being Spider-Man right now.
I mean, there are some movies that are lesser known, but yeah, in terms of like big budget, it's that and the Edward Drake movie. Yeah. Uncharted.
But at the same time, love Tom Holland. I mean, he's probably one of the most charming young actors in all of Hollywood, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think 100%. Doesn't hurt
Zendaya on his arm.
Does not hurt at all.
I would argue that Zendaya is easily the bigger star.
By far. It's not close.
He'd tell you that.
Yeah, I think like...
I would also.
I think it's funny you can draw a lot of parallels between Tom Holland and Tobey Maguire, right? You know, when Tobey Maguire got the role of Spider-Man, he'd done some stuff he wasn't as well known as he would become. And then he translated that into a lot of other success later on. Personally, I think Tom Holland is a better Spider-Man than Tobey Maguire was. Better Peter Parker, more relatable. It's like, okay, I believe him more as a teenager than Tobey Maguire. But yeah, I love him as Spider-Man. I think I think there's been a lot of trepidation about Spider-Man 4 on multiple fronts as to, was Tom going to come back? How are they going to go on without him if he didn't come back? That sort of thing. So it's encouraging from the standpoint that, hey, we've seen the script. It's good, but there needs to be some work done. And where the hell do we fit this in the whole timeline? So I thought the interview was the stuff about Robert Downey Jr. and Doom. I'm just thrilled that he learned how to keep a secret, but you know,
yeah,
that sort of thing. But
you know, we learn
from our mistakes. Now, if they could teach Mark Ruffalo that, they'd be perfect. But I love Tom as a Spider-Man. I think he's really put his flag in the ground as far as that character is concerned.
Yeah, I agree. And he has this big one. He's a good actor, and he's been in a lot of other good stuff, like, you know, indie sort of stuff. But it was just interesting to see. I do think he has a lot of agency and control over Spider-Man and how he plays Spider-Man. I think that goes without saying. So from that feels accurate out of that article.
Well, and he's even said, though, like, the story has to be right for him to continue to play the character after what they've done, continuing to progress the level of success for each movie going forward. Right. I mean,
right.
Was bigger than the first one. The last one was obviously the biggest of all three. So, you know, you want to continue that curve.
It's important to remember that Tom was such a good actor and so good in the role of Spider-Man that he's single-handedly was able to convince Amy Pascal to work with Kevin Feige.
Yeah.
So that's important to note that just that alone and the billions of dollars he's brought both studios will give him a little bit of gravitas and maybe even the ability to say, I want this script, I don't want the script. He's earned that because the box office has shown that. Every movie he's been in, every movie he's been a part of has grossed close to, if not over, $1 billion. Dude is shown in that role. He's fantastic. Right. The most important thing to me in the article in this interview, which is even bigger than, even more important to me than what he's doing as an actor, is how he's become a man. Tom Holland has talked a lot about his alcoholism. And, you know, when you're British, yeah, you start drinking very young, and how it kind of took over his life, and how he tried to go sober, and he did a cold turkey and felt terrible. And I watched this ever since Chadwick died. I have rethought the way I look at actors and what they're going through in real life, because to know that dude was doing all his stunts for all those movies, his own stunts for 90% of them, while fighting that devastating of a disease, I rethink everything. So hearing Tom Holland say how miserable he was and how terrible he was while filming these movies, and, you know, hear him talk about, you know, how we think it's no big deal, but how intrusive and almost suffocating the suit is, and he's in the suit so much of the shoot, and doing that while you're trying to quit that much of an addiction, cold turkey, and just to hear how he's come out of it, and how his friends and everybody around him has kind of acknowledged that, hey, you do you, we have your back. Like, it's just beautiful to hear. I'm not going to call him a boy because he's a grown man, but it's beautiful to hear, like, when we all have that moment, we're all grown men here, but we all have that moment where we turn from being a kid to an adult. And I'm not saying that this is the moment, but it's cool to hear that the mentality changed, and he's like, okay, I have to do better for myself. I'm a brand. I have a girlfriend now that's a bigger brand than me. I represent multiple studios. I bring in billions of dollars. I'm a role model to kids all over. The way he treats the role of Spider-Man in terms of the kids and the fans and the people is beautiful. He treats it like it's the most precious thing in the world to him. So that's the more cool and important stuff to me about this than the other stuff. It's cool that him and Donnie are so cool that Donnie told him. Like, that's dope to me. That's, you know, but, like, the fact that you're a good human and you're taking care of yourself, and I get to see you as all these people we've seen that we've loved that have been gone by 30, 35, 40. You know, I was gonna shout out Liam Payne at the end of the show, 30 fucking one. Knowing now that he's got the right mindset and the right thought process to hopefully be here in his 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and, like, really continue to give the gift he has to the world makes me happy. So, like, that's more important to me.
Absolutely. And shame on those people out there who criticized him when he released his non-alcoholic brand, because that was the fact that he had to, like, come out and make a statement afterwards, be like, yo, I suffered from alcoholism and trying to help people. Like, people are shitty. It's terrible how they can be. So, all right, let's head into the home stretch here, fellas. We are into wrapping it up time. And that means it's time to start talking a little bit about what you're watching this week. We will start with, let's start with David Ungar. Dave, what you watching?
So this week I do want to talk a little bit because I finished two shows. And one of them was Monarch Legacy of Monsters. Finished that up, season one. Love that show. I mean, I get some of the stuff going on at the end is a little bit far-fetched, but I love the way it ended. Really hope they get a second season. The Monarch Legacy of Monsters, because I thought it was pretty cool what they did. The other one, I have to preface this by asking you, Patrick, because I know Ray and Tony are not watching this. Have you finished Rings of Power yet?
I'm literally only an episode and a half in. It's paused halfway through the second episode upstairs in my family room. It was what I was doing before the show.
So today. I won't give away any spoilers. I'll just say we finished season two. It is phenomenal. The Tolkien purists out
there. Yeah, I've heard good things.
The Tolkien purists out there who are shitting all over this show just need to grow the fuck up and realize that, oh my God, like the MCU, somebody is taking some creative liberty with source material and doing something different with it. It is a excellent show, a significant increase over season one.
My only quibble right now is I'm like, and I understand it's a character development thing right now, but I am kind of exhausted with Galadriel and Elrond early in this season. I'm like, Jesus Christ, you whiny, petulant little bitches. Stop being that way.
It's a good story.
I'm sure it'll get
fine. Their evolution is good. The characterization of Sauron, and just when you see what a deceitful, manipulative force of not even nature.
Yeah, he was always
the universe. But to see it evolve the way that he puts everything in motion is fucking awesome.
Yeah,
it's, and I can't wait till you get to the end of it. It is phenomenal. I am hoping beyond hope that they get a third season out of it, because I know Amazon wanted to do five. You know, this season was not watched by as many people as the first one for stupid reasons. But I really hope this thing ended on such a powerful note with Sauron really flexing the muscles, that I really hope that we get a third season. It is a tremendous show. But those are the two big ones that I watched.
Cool. Ray Cat.
So I caught a movie that I wanted to watch years ago that just slipped out of my periphery, starring young Russell Crowe. And that's a joke because he's old as fuck. Unhinged. Movie where he was the road rage dude that's killed that was killing people, and it was it that's a I really tell you, I see your face, that's a gross miss, like there's a lot misrepresentation, there's a lot more to the movie than that, but no, but it was fun, it was a fun movie, it was good. Definitely it falls from in the horror tropes of the white girl just doesn't do the shit that makes sense, like just. The movie, if that had been a black dude, the movie would have been over in three minutes.
Head for the cemetery, Ray.
Why can't we just get in a running car?
Crazy.
Are you crazy? Yeah, let's go to that shack of hanging chainsaws.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was fun. I enjoyed that. So that's the only thing new that I've watched recently.
Cool. Tony, what you watching, buddy?
A note I forgot to mention, the Creature Commandos trailer, The Animals, Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood song was in that and was perfect for it and is a great song. So I forgot to mention that when we talked about it. Had to hit that note. Season 16 of Shark Tank, episode 1 just aired this week. Another good episode. I am in the midst of watching Hell's Kitchen season 23. It's Head Chefs Only. Season 2 of The Floor, new game show. Really good game show. Really fun game show. Rob Lowe is the host. And since I'm waiting for Dave to finish watching season 7 of Game of Thrones so we can start watching season 8, I just started yesterday rewatching Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I watched like the first 3 or 4 episodes. Yeah. So, yeah. Oh my God.
Nine-Nine!
Yeah. Fell in love all over again with all of those characters.
Is anybody watching The Penguin?
That's my favorite line of the whole thing.
Yes.
Not yet.
I have watched every episode.
Thumbs up or thumbs down?
I've heard it's been a big thumbs up, dude. People love
thumbs
it.
A 1,000,000% up. Colin Farrell needs to win every award ever created. He is amazing. And the chick that plays Sophia.
Yeah.
Episodes is one of the best freaking episodes ever for DC or MC or something. MCU.
You know how Rock do this shit when he come out? Because the goosebumps, that's what I get when I see her on screen. She burns the screen every time she's on.
I've heard she's phenomenal.
I thought Rock did that because he was matting the Sharpie writings on his arm so they didn't run.
That was...
You know,
we made
it through most of the show without making wrestling jokes.
That was Freddie Pebbles.
All right. So thanks, Dave, for kicking that off.
Sorry.
Are you, though? No. Let's move on to... Yeah. So I am still watching episodes of The Legend of Vox Machina. They drop 3 episodes a week on Amazon, and they just had a huge 3 episodes this week with character deaths and all kinds of craziness. The first episode of season 2 of Shrinking hit Apple TV Plus this week. First two episodes of Shrinking. And that show, I like it more and more every time I watch it, guys. It's been terrific. Harrison Ford is great in that series. It's wonderful, wonderful stuff. And I am eagerly anticipating the next episodes. I did, as I mentioned before, literally have an episode of Rings of Power paused upstairs on my television that I'm going to go finish before I go fetch dinner for the family. And then I've been watching the Netflix version, their relaunch of the classic sci-fi channel show Mystery Science Theater 3000. They did these episodes called The Gauntlet. I am on episode 3 of the 6 movie Gauntlet for their season 1, in which they are watching the terrible straight to DVD film Lords of the Deep. It's like, what if The Abyss at shitty production values all at one time That show is hilarious. I love it. And you should check it out too. You should also check out all the shows that we suggest to you on What You're Watching, because they're great stuff. It's why we have the segment, because we want you to check it out too. We're going to head out to the end of this show, though. But before we can do that, let's do a quick once around. Tell everybody where they can find us on the social media and on the Chair Shot Radio Network. This week, we will start with my lawyer friend, David Ungar.
You can find me on X at Attitude Ag. That is at Attitude AGG. Facebook.com/Attitude of Regression. At Attitude of Regression. All one word. Instagram and Threads. And for this week, if you want to send your hate tweets to somebody or something, send them all to at Spotify.
Counterclockwise to me, we go to Reverend Raymond S. Cashington Esquire, the 932nd, 244th.
I don't know how you remember all those damn numbers. I have, so you don't follow me. I want you to go to Amazon.com and I want you to go buy Bomb Brisket, a beginner's guide to barbecue's most legendary cut, by my good friend, my consigliere, and my big brother, Dave Ungar, number one. And number two, I want you to show some love and shout out to Liam Payne, 31 years old. Nobody should die that young, especially the way he died. Want to give some love to him, all the New Direction fans, One Direction, whatever. Yeah, you know what I mean. Sorry. But shout out to the boy. Don't follow me. Just go buy Dave's book. If you follow me, no, don't follow me. Just go buy Dave's book.
Raise the man.
And last but not least, PC Tunney.
At It's Ray Cash and at PC Tunney.
I hate at PC Tunney, for the record.
Okay, well, you can follow me on the X Twitter at Wrestling Realist. That is at WRESTLNGREALIST. You can catch me every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Monday, talking nerdy stuff with these guys. Tuesdays, talking hockey and music, but mostly just talking these days, with David Ungar. And on Wednesdays, when we feel like it, talking wrestling with Greg DeMarco. Maybe we get two shows in a row. We'll have to see. Tunney is hopeful.
That would be a streak.
All right, it would be a streak. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Hope everybody enjoyed the show. Now get yourself out of the basement, get some sun, and don't listen to Spotify, because fuck those guys. You've been listening to Bandwagon Nerds. Here, well, then cancel your subscription.
Nefarious means.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. This has been Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com.
Remember me, J.D. McNugent? I was the guy who went to the prom with the tuxedo painted on my naked body.
Oh, I guess I missed it.
I spilled a drink and the paint ran and everyone could see my dong.
Oh, it doesn't ring a bell.
Oh. Remember that time in science class I was lighting farts with a Bunsen burner and I singed my ball sack?
Oh, no.
Man, I still can't grow hair on my left nut.
Hey! What are you doing?
Dude, if you get the nachos stuck together, that's one nacho.
Ohio seniors, it's time to make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Plans start at $0 per month and include $0 doctor visits and $0 generic prescription drugs. Visit MedMutual.com/review or call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. MedMutual Advantage plans are HMO, HMO, POS, and PPO plans offered by Medical Mutual of Ohio with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in a MedMutual Advantage plan depends on contract renewal.